guys, I'm Jenna.
And I'm Gianna.
And this is One in Five,
a podcast about mental health. Hello, everyone. Today, we are going to be interviewing my co-host, Jenna, about her experience with anxiety and with being undiagnosed.
I'm so excited for today's interview.
Me too, girl. All right, let's go ahead and hop right into it. So, Jenna, when did you first start noticing the signs of your anxiety?
I started noticing the signs of anxiety in eighth grade, and it started with severe test anxiety, which I'm sure some people can relate to. It's just where you overthink test questions, and it causes you not to be able to focus, but eventually I got over that without needing any help, and it sort of went away. Also, I started experiencing social anxiety with events that normally would have been fun, but they scared me. So to every other middle schooler, I'm sure they would have been a super fun time, but I was really scared of them, and I wound up avoiding most of them. And so that's just when I first started noticing the signs of anxiety. An example of that would be my eighth grade dance. I tried everything I could to avoid it, and I told everyone I was not gonna go, and then finally at the last minute, I went with my friend because, I don't know, she just talked me into it so much. But I wound up hating it, and I became extremely anxious while I was there and very, very stressed. But after that year, for that summer, the anxiety went away.
Great. So what started to kind of trigger your anxiety?
So after eighth grade, as I said, the problem sort of went away, but then the first day of high school happened, and that's when all the triggers and the super, super intense anxiety began to show up. And so for me, my triggers were the bells that went off during class changes, as well as the alarms that would go off, for example, fire drills or any sort of things like that where you would have to leave the building and they were just really, really loud. Also, the crowds triggered me of people. I went from a very small school to all of a sudden a school with 2,000 kids, and I think that definitely played a part in the anxiety that I experienced.
Sure. So in the beginning, when all of this kind of started, how did your anxiety manifest itself? What were your symptoms?
For the alarms and the sounds that would scare me, my symptoms were heart racing, shortness of breath, I was not able to concentrate, and I was constantly terrified and super on edge, which isn't really a good state to be in when you're in school and you're trying to focus. With my anxiety, which I'll touch on later, that's sort of internal and wasn't really triggered by sounds and was more social and triggered by people, my symptoms for that were stomach aches, headaches, and just super intense feelings of nervousness.
So I know that you talked a lot about not being able to focus. I'm just curious myself, did that affect your grades?
Yes and no. I think yes, in the sense that it took me much longer to be able to do my assignments because I could not focus and I was constantly waiting for these sounds to go off, and I just was not able to effectively do my work. But no, in the sense that I put so much pressure on myself because I had this anxiety. And I might talk about this a little bit later, but I did not have very many friends at my school. So I put this sort of pressure on myself that because I didn't have any other distractions or like friends or anything, that I had to do well. And so I became extremely obsessed with doing my work perfectly and getting really, really good grades. So I hope that answers your question. So yes, yeah. And no.
I was just curious because I know for me, I'm kind of the same way where my OCD hasn't really affected my grades because I am such a perfectionist about my grades outside of OCD, but it has at certain points affected how fast I'm able to do my work. For example, I have this memory of being in fourth grade and not being able to do my math nearly as quickly as everyone else because I developed this compulsion where I had to look at the board and then look down at my paper and double check that the math problems matched. And I had to do that over and over and over again, even though my rational brain knew that I had written it down correct. My OCD just made me check over and over again. So that made me not do my work as fast. And I was always one of the last ones to finish. And I did it correctly. It just took me so much longer because of my OCD. Were there any memorable events at school that triggered your anxiety or affected the way that you felt about school?
I can definitely remember one specific event, and so I'll tell you all about that right now. One day, there was a power outage at my school, and because of the location I was in, I was in a hallway where there was doors on either side. And so when the power went out, these doors were magnetic, and they immediately slammed shut. And so all the students in the class, or at least most of us, assumed that there was a school shooter. And that was really, really terrifying. And to this day, I still have some problems with that if I'm in the same area. So yes, basically we all thought there was a shooter. And after that event occurred, each day when I would walk through the halls, my anxiety was so much more intense and I was so much more on edge because I didn't know if something that unexpected would happen again. And I think that that just enlisted more fear in me and sort of ultimately triggered my anxiety to consistently amplify itself. Also, I do have something else to add. While that situation was really, really triggering, another situation or multiple situations were triggering as well. And those were social situations. And what would happen in those social situations were I would internalize the comments that people would say to me. And in doing that, it caused me to have a really bad view of myself. And that was really sort of unhealthy for me to think like that. So those were the two main triggers that contributed to my anxiety.
So when did it get to the point where you knew that you needed to get help and you knew that you needed to start seeing someone?
So before I answer this question, I would just like to share something about myself. I am not the type of person to go and ask for help. Just with everyday life, that's not something I do. I guess you would have to say that I am a little bit controlling. I like to do things myself. To sort of answer that question, every day my mom would ask me if my day was good when she picked me up after school. And in past experiences, my answer had always been yes, which is, I would say, a pretty normal answer. Like, school should be a good day, most days, at least, in my opinion. But I remember every day always answering no. There was not one day that I answered yes in the months and months and months that I was in this school. And going along with that, every day I felt extremely tired and exhausted and just genuinely sad when I would come home because I knew that that environment was so triggering and so emotionally draining. I just felt like not myself. And I think that that was something that really scared me, just knowing that I wasn't the truest version of me. And so finally one day I had this little breakdown in the car, or it wasn't very little, it was quite big, but it was, I had a breakdown, and I think that that sort of realization of just knowing that I couldn't fix it anymore and that there was nothing that I could do that was solving the problem, I was trying to solve the problem, I was trying to go make friends and sort of find my place in the environment, but nothing was working. And I think just realizing that it was out of my control and that I needed someone else to sort of tell me where to go next.
So now that we've talked a little bit about how it started, how it progressed, and how you knew that you needed to get help, what is your anxiety like now?
So the most prominent type of anxiety I experience to this day is the thoughts that I feed myself. They're really self-degrading, and they're mostly about my personality and my actions and just overall about me as a person. And also, I overthink every single thing I do. I know that you may think that that's just a little thing that is sort of, it's okay, you can deal with it, but not when you overthink every single action. Like, every thought that I think, I have to overthink. Everything I say, I have to overthink.
At the beginning of this school year, I would overthink every single thing that my acting teacher said to me. Because I think it was very important for me to have that particular person's praise. I wanted them to know how hard I was working. And to be completely honest, I wanted them to like me. And I think that that made me just overthink every single little conversation I had to them, every little single thing I said to them, and that is just very draining.
Exactly.
Because your brain is constantly running and constantly thinking, why did I do that? What did I do wrong? But thankfully, in therapy, that was one of the things that I worked on with my therapist. Thankfully, it got a lot better, and this year I've really learned to let go of what other people are thinking of me, and it definitely still resurfaces, but it's not nearly as bad, and I think that that has made me a lot more okay to fail and a lot more able to mess up and not care about it because, you know, failing, that's how you grow as a person and as an artist, you know, when we're talking about it being with my acting teacher. But I completely understand where you're coming from. I completely understand those thoughts.
I'm definitely still in the process of sort of accepting those thoughts and understanding how to stop them, because eventually, even after 1 month of having this anxiety and thinking like this, it is so exhausting and I just want it to stop, but there's no way to make it stop. And except I am working on that. I am in therapy, but that is just something that I would like to really stress. That is what my anxiety is. It is the thoughts and the overthinking even more than it is the physical symptoms, like the panic attacks, which I will get into a little bit later. But going along with that as well, I overanalyze every single social situation I am put in, whether that's before or after the event. Oftentimes, I think with social anxiety, people sort of believe that it's just you get really nervous before you see someone and you stress and you have panic attacks and anxiety attacks, which that is true for me. I do have those before I see people, but my anxiety sort of gets a lot worse after the event when I have the time to sort of just overanalyze. I feel like that's the best way to put it, is I just break down every single comment I said, every single move I made, every single thought that I thought. Even though the person doesn't know I thought that, I still think about that and sort of tell myself, I'm like, Jenna, you shouldn't have done that. Jenna, you shouldn't have said that. Oh my gosh, Jenna, why did you do this? You know? And I think that that is just so unhealthy. And that goes along to the question before on why I needed to get help, is I couldn't keep going along like that. And to this day, I still do it, but it's gotten a little better. I think I'm still definitely in the process of working on that, because I will put in my head what the other person is thinking. And I think that that also goes along with my anxiety, is I just sort of tell myself that the person is thinking negative thoughts about me. Not that I should care, but my anxiety forces me to care. So that's all the overthinking and overanalyzing and all that stuff part of it. But due to the thoughts that I feed myself and put into my head, I sort of induce panic and anxiety attacks. And I'm still trying to figure out how to stop them. They're really, really unhealthy and they put you in a bad mindset. And it becomes extremely hard to get out of them, because it's not like once you have a panic attack, it just goes away. For me, at least in my experience, the feelings that go along with them, like the stomach aches and the constant feeling of needing to apologize, even if there's no one there, I have to apologize to myself, which is so strange, but I have to do it. I just feel like I have to. But yes, I think it's more than just the one panic attack. It's a lasting feeling, and it becomes extremely hard to get over. And then there's a little thing that I have that sort of goes along with my anxiety, and that is my phobias. I have two main phobias. One of them is really, really big, and one of them is a little bit smaller. But the smaller one is I am terrified of glass walls. So I cannot go near glass walls, and I cannot stand next to them. And by glass walls, I mean, you know how they have ledges where there's two floors and the glass wall sort of overlooks the first floor? I can't go near them. They terrify me so much. So that's just the smaller fear that I sort of have to deal with on everyday life, but I can get around that quite easily. The bigger phobia is hospitals. The technical definition for a fear of hospitals is called nosocomphobia. I don't know. I just think that makes it sound more professional. So I have nosocomphobia, but basically when I pull into the parking lot of a hospital, I begin having an intense panic attack, and it only gets worse as I go into the building. The walls terrify me. They are the most terrifying things in the world in my mind, which I know is a little weird, but it's true. It is the scariest thing to me. Also, the handrails that are on the walls are so scary. They make me have, like, even more of a panic attack than I'm already having if I see them. Also, the machines scare me, but that's pretty self-explanatory. I'm sure hospital machines scare a lot of people, but that's not where the majority of my fear comes from. The majority comes from the building itself, and just sort of knowing that I'm inside this place scares me so much. I would just like to add to that as well. It doesn't have to be if I'm there for me. So, like, if I'm going to visit somebody, I can't go. And to me, that's a problem, because if one of my parents was hospitalized, or one of my close friends, I would obviously want to go visit them. But because of my phobia and how bad it is, it would be worse for them if I went. I would like to share where it originated, because we do think that we know. I sort of broke it down with my therapist, and I think we came to this conclusion, but we're not really sure. When I was 7, my grandpa died of esophagus cancer, and while he was in the hospital, I did go to visit him. And I was 7, but I think that those images of him just, like, being hooked up to all the machines just sort of began the fear of seeing someone I loved in that position. And I think that that's where it comes from. I do think that the most important thing to realize with this fear, and why that I feel so strongly that I need to work on it, is because not only does it affect me, it affects the doctors if they're trying to do something to me, or if they're not trying to do something to me, if they're trying to do something to someone else. And then it affects the other person, and it affects everyone there, and it's just like, I'm having more trouble than the people in the hospital, and that just should not be the case at all. So I just think that that's something I need to work on, and I am working on it. That's just the majority of my anxiety.
So how do you cope with all of your anxiety?
Sure. So for the hospital phobia, since I just finished talking about that, my therapist has suggested this to me after Corona has passed, is kind of like what you do with your OCD, exposure response therapy. I'm not sure if it's actually called that, but basically she told me that I have to force myself to go to the parking lots. And once I get comfortable going into the parking lot, I'm gonna have to start going inside. And they do allow people just to go inside. And she's like, you need to be able to walk down a hallway and just walk out, and that's all you have to do. And to some people that may seem super easy, but to me that is like the scariest thing you will ever have me do. So it's gonna take a while for me to get there, but I will keep you updated once I start doing all of that. With my other anxiety, I do go to therapy. I have a specific coping mechanism that I will share that is very helpful in stopping panic attacks and also stopping those really mean thoughts that I feed to myself, and it's this color strategy. And basically what it does is you have to find everything red, orange, yellow, green, and so on in the room around you. And it forces your mind to stop thinking about whatever it's stressing about and have a goal to complete. That is always my go-to strategy to sort of stop a panic attack and to stop the thoughts as well.
I love that coping mechanism. Ever since you told it to me, I've been thinking about it all the time. I just stop and find all of the different colored things in the room. I think it is such a good way to distract your brain and give you something to focus on other than all of those terrible thoughts that are rushing through your brain.
Exactly, and I think that a lot of coping mechanisms that you'll hear thrown out more commonly are the ones that are like, wiggle your hands and wiggle your toes and count backwards. And yes, those are really helpful, but for me, that does not stop the thoughts. My mind has to have something physically to do in order to stop thinking, and so that's just the one that's most helpful for me. Also, the last thing I do is I have a problem where at night, I can't fall asleep because my anxiety is so intense. And what my therapist has me do is just find a book and just get super involved with it. That is just another thing that forces my brain to stop thinking and read. I remember when she told this to me, she suggested that I read a pretty boring book just so it would put me to sleep. But I wound up reading Becoming by Michelle Obama. I love it so much. So now every night, I'm just super excited to read it. And I guess it still does what it's supposed to do. It still stops the thoughts, but I don't know. I love reading that book.
Awesome. So one thing that I wanted us to talk about, Jenna, obviously you know that you have anxiety. However, I know that we've talked about before that you are not technically diagnosed with anything. your therapist and you've talked about how you kind of fit into the box of generalized anxiety disorder, but you're not quite sure if that's it or if it's something a little different. And while obviously being diagnosed is not super important, you can still treat your anxiety and still treat what's going on without pinpointing exactly what it is that you have. But I know that for you, you're someone who does a lot of research and you like to know exactly what's going on. So if you want to talk to us a little bit about that experience and what you're currently working through to get diagnosed.
I'll definitely share about that. As a person who likes to be in control of myself and what's going on around me, it's extremely frustrating not knowing what is going on inside my head. Because if you think about it, this is what affects me on the daily basis the most, and what is such a controlling factor in my life, and the fact that I don't know what it is just really bothers me, and I know that that won't bother everyone, and it won't be the same for everyone. For me personally, I would really, really, really love to know what is exactly going on. My therapist and I are sort of working to figure out what's wrong, because a little while ago, she sat me down and sort of was like, Jenna, you're anxiety is very serious and you probably need medication, but obviously as a therapist she can't prescribe me that, so she referred me to someone who could. While she did refer me to someone that can specifically diagnose me and comprehend if I need medicine or not, so I don't have an exact date on when I'm going to meet with them because of the fact that there's such this large backup, which is due to coronavirus. But overall, we're in the process of getting that figured out, and that's something that's really important to me, so I'm looking forward to the time that I can sort of share more about what I have and once I know what that is.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. We're so excited to get a little update from you once you were able to be officially diagnosed. So now I wanted to ask you a question that you asked me last week that I loved. How does your anxiety affect your relationships?
I am very lucky enough and I'm very fortunate to have such a supportive family with my anxiety, and the fact that they were willing to get me the help that I needed means so much to me. So my anxiety doesn't quote unquote affect them that much because they do understand it and they work to understand it. So I'm, like I said, I'm very grateful for them. But going into the more serious side, the friendship aspect, that is the main thing my anxiety affects other than me as a person. So to sort of give you a little insight into how my anxiety works with my friendships, I create these thoughts and these sort of situations in my head that my anxiety makes me believe that my friends are thinking and saying these certain things that they probably aren't, but my anxiety brain makes me think that, and that further causes me to distance myself from them and not be willing to open up to any of them. I think that can be a little bit difficult for some of my friends to understand because they'll often think that I can just sort of tell myself to stop thinking them, and they can try their best to reassure me that they're not thinking these things and that they love me, and I appreciate that so, so much. But ultimately, that doesn't stop the anxiety and that doesn't stop the thoughts from coming. So I would just like to leave you with this statement. Anxiety, at least in my experience, is rationalizing the irrational. I think if you're one of my friends, or if you're not one of my friends, and you're just a person and you know someone who's experiencing anxiety, please remember that. And please remember that while the person may try their best to understand that you're trying to help them and that you're trying to be supportive of them, they may take it differently and they may take it as pressure to open up, which I know that I've experienced before, and that is not a very fun situation to be in on the mental illness side of it, just because you feel kind of forced to talk about what makes you really uncomfortable, and that's just not the place to be in. So with that all being said, just please keep in mind that anxiety is rationalizing the irrational.
I know that you've talked to me a lot about how you don't have a ton of people that you feel like you can talk to about your anxiety, and that you often hide your feelings and what you're going through. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, for sure. I think that this is one of the most, like, sensitive things for me to talk about, just because it sort of triggers a lot of my anxiety, but I'm going to share anyway. I'm just going to sort of say what I think, and you can take it for what it is. And it's just how my thoughts work. But my biggest reason for not sharing and for believing that I don't have the people to talk to is because I am so afraid that my anxiety will be minimized by the people that I care most about, or that care most about me, and that they will not take it for the seriousness that it is. It is something that affects me on the daily, and just the thought of it being dismissed and the thought of people just saying, oh, it's fine, get over it, you'll get through it, it's okay, it is really, really hard to hear and take in. And I think that my brain just sort of told me, if you don't tell these people, and if you act like you're fine all the time, and you make everyone think that you're okay, then you won't have to feel that, and you won't have to think that they're not understanding you, and that they're gonna dismiss your disorder. That's my one big worry, that people will diminish my anxiety to something smaller than it really is. I also really, really worry that my friends, or people in general, will just treat me differently, whether that be positively or negatively. And furthermore, I'm just worried that I will become defined by my disorder, and that's something that I really don't want to happen. So that's just a few of the reasons on why I never wanted to share.
So I know today we've talked a lot about the negatives of anxiety and how it makes your life a little bit harder every single day, but are there any positives that have come out of having anxiety?
Definitely. I think that my anxiety has made me so much more mature. I think I've learned so much about myself and how I handle problems, and sometimes I don't handle them the best, but I think that I've learned to handle them a lot better, and that goes along with the more mature part. And then I also think that my anxiety has helped me to empathize with people who have the disorder as well, or who have other mental disorders that without having anxiety, I probably wouldn't have been able to comprehend what they've gone through.
All right, and to end this interview off, Jenna, I want to ask, why do you think we have such a large mental health crisis today?
I definitely agree with what you said last week, Gianna, about how technology and social media play such a big part in the mental health crisis. I am an example of someone who definitely compares themselves to others on social media, but I'm working on it and I am reducing my social media intake, which has definitely helped a lot. And I suggest doing that as well, if you can or if you would like to. But the main thing that I believe contributes to our mental health crisis is society's view of mental health and the fact that people can't share what's going on inside their head because they're worried about what others might think or they're worried about what others might say. And I think that's harmful. And when you're not sharing it, it does build up and get a lot more intense inside your head. And I also believe that honesty plays a role in the crisis as well. Like I said, people are so concerned with what others will think that they just keep it so internalized that they have trouble dealing with it. And I think that that's just an issue that needs to be fixed, and I hope that's what we're doing with this podcast.
Well, I think with that, this episode is coming to a close. Thank you so much for sharing with us. So I hope you guys all enjoyed hearing more about Jenna and about her anxiety. For all of you listening out there, make sure to subscribe to the podcast if you are on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure to give us a review. We would love to hear from you. As well, if you have any questions for us, especially Jenna, about her anxiety, make sure to email us, 1in5podcast@gmail.com, or you can shoot us a quick Instagram DM. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and keep up with all things podcast related. It is at 1in5pod, and that is everything. Make sure to tune in next Monday. We are so excited to bring you a brand new episode every single week.
We are gonna head out, but I hope that this episode sort of taught you something, or even just taught you something about me and how I think. I think it can be really helpful, and I hope that you can use some of the things I said to your advantage.
Bye, guys.
Bye.